Chapter 19. Peppa and the Mudmen. It was the year of 1967, and I was more than halfway through my second year at the National Art School's Randwick campus in Sydney, as the August holidays approached. As always, I began to mentally prepare myself for the cultural shift that was required whenever I left Australia to return to the New Guinea Highlands. This time, I was headed for Goroka, the small settlement where my mother was currently living and working. Re-entry required adjusting to high-altitude living, a change of diet, and the need to move between two languages, English and Tok-Pising. I was really looking forward to a change of scene, because studying at the National Art School was an intense experience, as I concentrated on refining my art-making techniques across the subject areas on offer. With no familial support, I cracked on, rarely missing any one of the fascinating weekday classes. My downtime was filled with homework, laundry, complicated dressmaking projects, in my attempt to emulate Jackie Kennedy, and socializing. In May of that year, amidst the flurry of worldwide expectation, the Beatles released their Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band album. With my return to Goroka imminent, I splurged and purchased the 40 minutes of riveting lyrics and cutting-edge music on an LP record. I was keen to see how the LP would be received by the expatriates living in the New Guinea Highlands, who, in spite of their isolation, were eager to stay in touch with what was happening in the wider world. By the time I was due to head north, I'd played the record so many times that I knew the lyrics of each song by heart. At last, departure day arrived. I headed out to Kingsford Smith Airport, my suitcase filled with a number of very stylish outfits I had made since my last visit, with matching shoes and accessories for each outfit. But I wasn't prepared to risk stowing the Sgt. Pepper record in my suitcase. Instead, I carried it on board the aircraft, along with my handbag and the obligatory beauty case containing the beauty aids and makeup I'd need whilst I was away. As always, I returned to the Goroka community exuding the supreme confidence of an 18-year-old, while aware of the shortage of women, an oversupply of young single men, many with a heightened sense of adventure I found most attractive. My mother met me at the airstrip, excited to welcome me home. My visits gave her an excuse to take time off from her all-consuming job. Her job was innovative and huge. She single-handedly managed 26 wool project units throughout the Highlands. To begin with, we'd spend a day or so together catching up. We'd take turns to swap snippets of Goroka gossip for snippets from Sydney. Once we'd caught up, we were ready for whatever came next. Dressmaking, socializing, and this time, spinning Sgt. Pepper on the record player. In small communities like Goroka, word spreads fast. And so it was with the arrival of the Sgt. Pepper LP, because it wasn't long before a couple of Kiaps from Asaro, who were in town on outstation business, dropped by to suggest a Sgt. Pepper party. They proposed gathering the following Saturday at their patrol post, a 30-minute drive from Goroka, and, of course, we immediately accepted their invitation. Saturday arrived, and after we'd dressed appropriately for an outstation party, I carefully placed the Sgt. Pepper LP on the back seat of my mother's car, before driving west along the bumpy Highlands Highway to Asaro. We arrived in time to join in the mid-afternoon activities. And as you guessed, consuming alcohol. So, priming the pump before the Sgt. Pepper party proper got started. On outstations throughout Papua and New Guinea, the schoolhouse, if there is one, was occasionally used as the Kiap social club, out of school hours. We arrived to find the schoolroom had been cleared of all superfluous school-related paraphernalia and now had all the trappings of a social club. The centerpiece was the bar. The floor space, we'd later use for dancing, had been ringed with chairs. A record player, connected to two very tall speakers, was waiting, ready to play the radical songs on both sides of my Sgt. Pepper record. The Kiaps had invited their expat neighbors to the Sgt. Pepper party, some living nearby, and others like us, from further afield. The fertile Asaro Valley remained heavily populated by many Melanesian clan groups, as it had been for millennia, long before the coming of Europeans. The men of one local clan group, the Kamunavi, were well known for performing a strange, silent, menacing dance that was acknowledged worldwide for its uniqueness. Legend has it that a group of Kamunavi warriors, who'd survived an attack by a neighboring tribe, fled to the Asaro River. At the river's edge, they fell into a mud puddle, emerging with their bodies coated top to toe in light gray mud. Their attackers, determined to finish the job, pursued them to the river's edge, where they were confronted by a cluster of ghostly figures. The attackers, convinced they were the avenging spirits of the Kamunavi men they had just killed, turned tail and ran. After their miraculous escape, the men realized the advantage their mud costume gave them. They enhanced their advantage by making frightening mud masks using clay from the river, then devised a grotesque silent, free-form dance that was their imagined interpretation of the movements made by departed spirits. Thereafter, whenever enemy tribes threatened, the Kamunavi men would coat themselves in gray mud, place frightening clay helmets on their heads, before taking up their weapons. At least one of their number would attach long bamboo fingernails to their fingers, and together the group would drive off their attackers with their eerie wordless dance, accompanied by the clacking sound of bamboo fingernails. But I digress. Back to the party. The schoolhouse, come social club, was a large rectangular building with smooth timber floor, woven bamboo walls and a thatched roof, and supported by round timber crossbeams. From the bar came a steady stream of refreshments and nibbles, so it wasn't long before we were all sufficiently lubricated to abandon our inhibitions and take to the dance floor to jiggle up and down to the Beatles' latest songs. As the dance floor filled to overflowing, my mother decided on a most unconventional course of action. She somehow managed to reach up and grab hold of the round timber crossbeam above her head. And what happened next was beyond breathtaking. I watched in disbelief as my mother twisted herself to hang upside down from the crossbeam, swinging backwards and forwards in time with Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds with its Out There lyrics, thought to be a thinly disguised reference to LSD. I was shocked numb by my mother's antics, but there was nowhere to hide. In public, I was always anxious to make a good impression, that of a responsible teenage daughter from a broken home, but this incident wasn't the first, or the last time I would be embarrassed by my mother's behavior. I have no idea how we got her down, but the party continued into the wee small hours, with Sergeant Pepper on high rotation, blasting out across the Asaro Valley. It seemed the gathering couldn't get enough of Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. I was delighted that the music was receiving the same positive response in this far-flung corner of the world, as it was globally. As dawn broke, we bade farewell to our Asaro hosts to drive back to Goroka, noting that we weren't the last to leave the gathering. As we were leaving, I made sure my precious Sergeant Pepper record was safely stowed on the back seat of my mother's car. The party was over, but I still had another full week of holidays in Goroka. To fill the time, I planned a number of interesting dressmaking projects, using lengths of beautiful hand-woven fabric my mother had set aside for me to use. My favorite was the skirt and poncho I made from a black and white Czech woolen blanket. I took the time to match the Czechs perfectly, before lining the skirt with red cotton fabric, and carefully hemstitching the poncho fringe in matching thread, to avoid fraying. I considered myself a ball of style as I modeled the outfit. The poncho, worn over a fine red wool jumper, and the skirt, with flat red shoes, completed the ensemble. My mother insisted on photographing the outfit on the veranda of our house, and by a stroke of luck, I still have the photograph today. But I digress. With my mega dressmaking mission a success, I'd be going back to Australia with my suitcase full to overflowing with a number of strikingly original winter outfits that would be most suitable for rubbing shoulders with Sydney's stylish arts fraternity at the numerous art show openings we attended. Before I left Goroka, my mother and I had the opportunity to discuss my future at the National Art School. I explained that towards the end of my second year at Randwick Technical College, I'd be asked to make a decision that on completion of my studies, would define my career path. There were two distinct study streams on offer. The first was the Commercial Arts Certificate stream, requiring one more year of full-time study, of particular interest to those itching to complete a qualification and join the workforce. The second was the Fine Arts Diploma, requiring three more years of full-time study, majoring in either painting, drawing, sculpture, or ceramics. For the record, textiles wasn't offered as a fine arts major at the National Art School, or anywhere else in those days. That was years away. For me, it was a no-brainer. I wanted to complete the Commercial Arts Certificate and get out into the workforce, because I knew full well I wasn't the fine artist the world had been waiting for. Some days later, it was time for me to return to Sydney to complete the last term of my second year art studies. I knew I wouldn't be returning to New Guinea for Christmas that year, because for the first time, I'd been invited to visit my father and his second wife, who were now living in Nairobi, Kenya. I was really looking forward to visiting Africa, for what I hoped would be a number of visits, if things worked out well. On reflection, New Guinea and Australia. After a couple of weeks in New Guinea, I'd begin to crave the predictability of my Sydney life. On my return, it wasn't long before the predictability of city life began to grate. I now realize I was caught between two worlds. Kiap parties. Outstation gatherings were a most effective way for single Kiaps to return hospitality. In retrospect, I wonder what the Asaro mudmen and their families thought of our acoustic intrusion. Their previous exposure to European music, if any, would have been provided by one of a number of Christian missions, with him singing the focus. I imagine they were completely bewildered by the discordant sounds of the Sgt. Pepper song cycle, as it floated across their land for the duration of the gathering. The sounds in sharp contrast to the melodic hymns they had learned to sing in church. Family dynamics. My mother's unpredictable actions and reactions always worried me. My parents separated in 1958, and then divorced in 1960. In between, I did what I could to cope with the ramifications of my parents' separation, determined to overcome the shame I felt, as the product of a failed marriage. To do this, I decided to reinvent myself as the perfect daughter of divorced parents. I took the role very seriously, becoming my mother's confidant, often unconsciously engaging in role reversal, where I became the parent, and she, the child. The price I paid for the years of role reversal was a forfeited adolescence. I've since come to understand that adolescence is an essential developmental stage for humans. A time to explore, to push boundaries, and fully interrogate life. I'm pleased to report that I was able to revisit my adolescence when I was 24 years old, whilst studying in Mexico. Fortunately, Mexico was far away from the prying eyes and long memories of adopted family and friends back in Australia. Mexico offered me the opportunity to conceal my youthful indiscretions, thereby avoiding the embarrassment of being reminded of them, long into adulthood. Art school. By the end of second term, it became abundantly clear my creative output fell well short of the work being produced by my classmates, and, as a result, I was unlikely to find fame or fortune as a fine artist. Being a pragmatist at heart, and in consultation with my parents, I'd chosen the Commercial Arts Certificate option, the shorter of the two study streams on offer. With the decision made, I began to dream about the possible job opportunities out there in the real world after I'd completed my course. I was filled with optimism, as the late 1960s in Australia were the halcyon days of full employment, and I was quite sure I'd find well-paid work as a commercial artist somewhere in Sydney after I'd graduated. As the result of my decision, my final year of art study would take place at the East Sydney Technical College campus of the National Art School, in Darlinghurst, where the Commercial Arts Certificate stream was taught, but not until I'd returned from my first trip to Africa. Facts. The languages of Papua and New Guinea. Papua New Guinea is a sovereign state in Oceania. It's the most linguistically diverse country in the world. According to Ethnologue, the respected language catalogue, there are 839 living languages, not dialects, spoken in the country. The languages with statutory recognition are Tok Pisin, English, Hiri Motu and Papua New Guinean Sign Language. Tok Pisin, an English-based Creole, is the most widely spoken, serving as the country's lingua franca. The Beatles? Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band is the eighth studio album by The Beatles, the world-famous English rock band. The album was released in the United Kingdom in May of 1967, and in Australia in July of that year. It spent 27 weeks at number one on the record retailer chart in the United Kingdom, and 15 weeks at number one on the Billboard Top Albums chart in the United States. It was lauded by critics for innovative songwriting, production and graphic design, for bridging the cultural divide between popular music and high art, and for reflecting the interests of contemporary youth and the counterculture. Its release was a defining moment in 1960s pop culture, heralding the summer of love, while the album's reception achieved full cultural legitimization for pop music and recognition for the medium as a genuine art form.